Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
If I had either like a crazy rock scream I was able to do, or else maybe a guttural growl, I would be doing it here at your home for rock and roll. 720 WGN, Daniel in from 2 until 5 today, in for Matt Bubala. You heard him. We talked a little bit in the crosstalk about him divulging the secrets of the juvenile note writing for The Excuse. And,
I think they just tweeted it now, you know, or send a quick text.
they hack into the
Mrs.
parents.
Mrs. Johnson, I'm not coming in, period.
Dino. And, of course, that is the voice of Dino Tubera. He will be in with us the duration of the program as well, and we're going to talk about topics that are ranging. Of course, if you hear Dino, you know we're going to be channeling Harry Carey at some point, because this is, we've talked about the anticipation, we've talked about the waiting, talked about the prognostication as far as Vegas now putting that extra pressure. But Joe Maddon is an actual human pressure valve, right? He releases the pressure by dressing up in a tie-dye shirt, bringing in the mystery machine and saying it's just going to be groovy, don't worry about it. But Vegas has the Cubs as the favorites,
not only one favorites
to win the World Series. I mean, so we're going to talk about Cubs. We're going to talk about pressure. We are going to jump around a little bit as well. We'll talk some kids and notes and teachers, and people can kind of share their biggest and best excuse if they want to do that. But we'll talk a little food. Michael Simon, Iron Chef. You see him on the Chew. Got a chance to talk with him down at the South Beach Wine and Food Festival about Meatopia, an event that I have worked with and that a mutual friend of ours had started. And so great to hear his thoughts on Josh Ozersky, who passed away just about a year ago. And so we're going to talk about, it's not a big downer, it's actually fun and everything like that. So let's not get sad, right? And then Katie Lee, she's always perky. She's on The Kitchen for Food Network, and she's got some great things recipe-wise and health things that she is going to share with us. And Dino, have you ever been to the Chicago French Market?
I haven't. I have not been there. Where have I been? I need to get out and enjoy what that's all about. I have no idea what it is.
Well, you're going to learn. You're going to learn first.
That's great.
It is a combination of so many different kinds of foods. I think it was by Esquire magazine, it was rated, you know, one of the top 10 food courts in the United States. And so to have that be a resource, a delicious destination that you're not aware of, and I'm guessing a number of other listeners might not be as well. But we're going to talk a little bit about that as well, along with Trump. Well, not just Trump, just the whole
political scene's just been out of control this time.
Absolutely. I mean, and you think what kind of changes are going to happen as we usher in some of that technology, just as kids are tweeting in their excuses to their teachers.
Sure.
Our candidates are tweeting out insults and whatever and negative campaign messages to each other. So we're going to do that. We're also going to talk about, and Sean Davis in the booth is going to be with us, not only with the great bumpers, but also some excellent input and content. So we'll talk about some of the every U.S. president's favorite drink, you know, from a George Bush, you know, with his side of broccoli-free, you know, vegetables, and probably a large frosty glass of milk, to a Lyndon Johnson who enjoyed a giant, a big gulp glass of Cutty Sark.
Oh, God.
Right?
LBJ, boy, oh, boy.
And we're going to have Mark Karlinski. He is the editor over at the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin. He's going to kind of weigh in with an expert opinion on the political scene. And then Evan Moore from the Red Eye and DNA, going to talk a little Cubs baseball and preseason, spring training, all that stuff.
Yep.
WGN, Daniel in the Allstate Showcase Studio until 5 a.m. We're going to be talking current events, certainly some food. We're going to talk some Cubs baseball. That's a positive thing, right?
There's no doubt about it. Spring training's here.
So we're going to be getting to the I can't believe it. I am so absolutely super excited. I almost want to just talk about it now, but it's kind of like that whole,
let's hold off on
don't
that
eat
one.
The piece of cake right away.
That's right.
You got to eat the other stuff, too. And as a guy that gets to look at some of these stories and decide how to share them and find, hopefully, you know, the humor in some of them. From an entertainment standpoint, the political landscape and the conventions and everything that's going on is just absolutely hilarious. I mean, but it's also terrifying.
And, right, and it's because also, one of these people is going to end up leading the country.
Well, and it's also, I don't know. It's all sorts of things that it has never been before. And I don't know if it hasn't been bright enough and shiny enough and blinky enough for me to pay as much attention in past elections as I have this time, because now it's really big. You know, it's crazy with all the things going on. But I look at the candidates, and you know, regardless of what side you come down on, I don't consider myself a particularly political person. You know, I voted Republican, I voted Democrat. It depends on the person. You know, it really depends on that person, what you think that they have and can bring to that particular job. But on the Republican side, and I think that's the one only because it's just because it's got this. He's, you know, undeniably a star and personality. Donald Trump has inserted himself into the political process like he has never been before. You know, he's always kind of been involved. You know, he's endorsing candidates. I don't see Jimmy Fallon endorsing candidates. Right?
No.
I've got the Jimmy Fallon endorsement. So he's always in there, you know, and for the last at least handful of presidential races, I thought it was just a ploy where he would just kind of say, like, hey, I'm thinking of running. And then people would all ask him. And then at the end,
he would back out. And
like, I can't do it. I don't have time. I got Apprentice, you know, season 8 coming up. I got to worry about whether Little John and so-and-so
and
Omaha Steaks are going to, you know.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
Who he's going to fire.
But I don't know if he even really believed that it would get this far, but it has. And he is one of those guys that is, if you just ask him, he's one of those guys that likes to win in whatever situation he is. And I think he sees that it's attainable.
Yeah, it's been pretty remarkable where it's come from, like you say, just when he started out casually saying he was going to run. And then now he's a full-blown candidate and he's leading in the polls and, you know, just all this stuff. And the things that really cracks me up is every time someone's trying to knock him down, it seems like his poll numbers go up for some reason. And he'll say something controversial and you'll think, God, this is going to knock him down a ways. And the next poll that comes out, he's got more support than he did before.
You know, as somebody who's that kind of that casual observer, you know, just kind of watching the thing, it seems like all the things we knew about campaigns and all the rules we knew about what you could do, what you couldn't do, what some of the repercussions were, none of the rules apply to Donald Trump. And I mean, and it is the craziest thing. And here's the thing too, is he can, like you said, he can say things where you're like, whoa, you know, did he just call the Pope a loser?
Right.
You know, and not in maybe so many words, but he doesn't mince words, you know, often on these situations. And you think that would be an issue, but he's able to say, like, I'm an outsider. You know, I'm not a political.
It's a clean slate with him because he doesn't have all the bias that all the, you know, the quote unquote career politicians have. I mean, he's got an opinion just like everybody else, but he doesn't have the background. And you know, in some ways, people are using that against him, saying, well, he doesn't have the experience. He doesn't have, you know, he can't draw back on any experiences before as a politician because he hasn't been one. But at the same time, he's using that as, I don't have all those biases that other people have. And he's able to use that to his own advantage.
The things that people see as positives, and there are so many fans, obviously he's winning elections. So somebody, you know, he has fans out there, is the fact that he comes from the outside. So he's somebody that will, regardless, you know, right, wrong, indifferent, good or bad, he's bringing change.
Or right? At least making people think that there's going to be change.
Yeah, that's part of his thing is that he's going to be bringing change to the situation. And Dino, you're right, is that he's able to really just sit back and say, here's where it's all wrong. Because he was not a part of anything that was built in before. They can't say to him, like, well, Donald, you voted for this, and this kind of sucked. He's got nothing like that. The fact that he's able to come out and say, you know, whether it's the, you know, whether it's like the build a wall or Mexico is sending all their criminals and rapists, and then some of the racist situation that's going on, whether, I think he gets kind of a little, you know, the media is kind of jumping on him in other ways too. Everyone is kind of jumping on him in certain ways, but he says things that would normally really tank a candidate, and I'm doing the air quotes, but his numbers continue to go up.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I think you hit on it before when, you know, it's the people out there being a different voice and the fact that he keeps preaching on the fact that, you know, he's going to make changes and things are going to change. It's not status quo like it is with the normal politicians. It resonates with the normal, you know, the average person who says, yeah, we've heard all this rhetoric over and over again over all these years. This is a refreshing point of view because it's different. You know, he comes right out and says it, and he says, we're going to make a change, and you really almost believe that it's going
to
happen.
Well, you know, and it may. I mean, I think that it remains to be seen. But what it also does, not only is he able to do different things, but the other people within the campaigns are doing at least things I haven't seen before. I mean, the debates are there's oftentimes contentious, but instead of where it's like, I knew Jack Kennedy and you're no Jack Kennedy,
right.
Instead of something that's kind of a dig or someone implying that maybe Ronald Reagan is too old.
Right.
This is just like, you're a loser. You're little. What about my hands? And then the other guys are just absolutely just as bad.
Well, it started out very calm. And when he would throw his barbs out, there wasn't a lot of resistance. There wasn't, Cruz and Rubio didn't really have much to say right in the beginning. But now it's like, it's all no holds barred now. Everyone's just firing back and forth.
It is like an episode of Springer, and I think that they are so close podium-wise that the next thing, naturally in my mind, the way this works out is
someone's going to swing.
Somebody takes off a shoe, right, and whips it at the other person. 312-981-7200. And I don't want to get necessarily too far into like the issues of what one candidate says they're going to do or not do, but just kind of, your perspective, either text at that 312-981-7200 or by phone, just your perspective on this as such a completely different political situation and landscape than we've seen before. And we do have Mike on the line. Mike, welcome to the show. Mike, are you there?
How do you guys explain how it's like four times this week, black people have been thrown out of his rallies, they've been pushed, they've been kicked, whatever else. This is the dirty side of the Republican Party that's now coming out in public. I mean, I haven't seen stuff like, I'm a history professor, I haven't seen stuff like this since Hitler in Germany back in the 1930s, where people they can't protest at a rally.
Mike, as a history professor, and I want to tap in a little bit to some of your experiences, that it really does seem that he, for a candidate, that's one thing that the politicians typically kind of understand. They've got to have some kind of a thick skin, right? Because no matter what your position is, 50% or more are going to not see eye to eye with you. But he's just so not used to being criticized. And I'm coming at this just totally objectively. He seems to really get upset when people criticize him that he can't handle protesters.
But he's advocating violence. Get him out of here. Get him out of here. Don't hurt him if you don't have to. I mean, what kind of rhetoric is this? How is this playing across the world where you've got a candidate from a major party getting people thrown out of their rallies because they don't agree with him?
Yeah. Well, no, and I hear you, and that's an excellent point, too, and it's one of the things that in our house we've been talking about is, okay, when the smoke clears and you understand it, you do something, and you play the game by the rules, and you get to a point where you get a nomination, and maybe you get into the position as far as the presidency, and then you wonder, like, how is that going to work as far as if he can't get along with other people from his own party? How is he going to get along with like people who obviously we don't get along with, leaders of other countries? But then there's, some of the supporters are saying like, that's exactly what we need. We need a tough stance. We need somebody that's going to be tough with those, either with our trade partners or with people politically that we don't get along with. Yeah, I don't know how it's all going to work out. Now, were you surprised, before we let you go, Mike, were you surprised that Mitt Romney came out? I had never seen anything like that where a former candidate, but a person that's a respected member of the party, a long time guy,
yeah,
came out and basically says, we just can't have this. It can't be done.
Because I don't think Trump's a Republican. Trump is an opportunist. This happened before with Kiehoffer back in the 50s, where Stevenson got the nomination over Kiehoffer in 52 from the Democratic Party. So it used to happen. It doesn't happen anymore. But, I mean, can you imagine after Cleveland, airways are going to be full of clips of people being thrown out of Trump rallies? And how is he going to answer that?
I don't know. And how he answers any criticism is usually either he brushes it off and says that it doesn't apply to him, or he says he didn't say that. So we'll see how it all goes. Mike, thanks.
That's the problem with most politicians today, but especially Republicans. There's videotape out there. There's YouTube. You can say whatever you want to say and say I didn't say it, and all they got to do is go on the computer and find out that you did say it.
I hear you, Mike, but that doesn't seem to affect him either. But Mike, thanks so much for the call and sharing with us here on WGN. Thanks so much.
All right, thank you.
All right, we've got Gary in Milwaukee. Gary,
how are you doing tonight?
We're doing good, okay, and we're just kind of looking at it. And then how is as far as like the crazy landscape, some of the things that are happening that we haven't necessarily seen before, but then also what does it mean for the Republican Party? I mean, to have Mitt Romney come out and make that speech and say we just can't have this, but as far as the score, if you're looking at a game, like Donald Trump is way ahead. It looks like he's going to win. What are you going to do?
Well, I think Romney does have, I'm a Democrat, but I believe that Romney has some dignity. And I believe he came out and he said what he believed. I can't believe it. I'm amazed that on a national debate on TV that they're talking about the size of Donald Trump's talking about the size of his penis. I'm surprised that Rubio brought up the size of his penis. I mean, it's amazing that America is just like, following this like it's like, a game show.
Well, Gary,
our whole country.
Yeah. It's one of those things that we had talked about off the air, and certainly we've talked about at home, and everybody's talking about is these guys. They just, everything is about what they're doing, regardless of what happens, and maybe when they get in the office, and some of them have been elected and been senators, but right now no one's acting presidential.
Absolutely no way. And it's like, I remember I'm 63 years old. And it's like, Donald Trump, he wants to send 100,000 troops over to Syria. He said all this stuff. All these guys say all this stuff. All these politicians talk about how they're going to be really bad. They're going to kick some butt. But none of them ever went to, I was in Nam. And I didn't see any of these doodlebugs over there. And it's like, they just run their mouths. And it's like, I can't believe that everybody's eating it up.
Well,
and I saw on TV where there was American Legion people. You saw veterans supporting Trump. This guy, he had a trick knee. He got out of Vietnam because he had a trick knee. I'm sure it's great now, but it's frustrating.
Well, Gary, I appreciate you weighing in, especially on the GOP side. And of course, you've got the relatively calm, stable waters of the Democratic side to think about up there in Milwaukee. But thanks so much for being in WGN. I appreciate you weighing in.
Thank you for taking my call. I'll listen to the rest of your show.
All right. Thanks. 312-981-7200 to weigh in. We're not necessarily getting into the specifics of whose platform is this or who's going to have a better tax plan or who's going to do this. Just kind of, your observations.
Casual.
And just this kind of the.
It's got a like 80s, 90s beat to it there.
I think the word is timeless that you're looking for, Dino. 720.
That might be it.
WGN, Daniel in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Dino Tiberi is to my right. Sean Davis in the booth. And we were giving people, we kind of wanted to share, our thoughts and get your thoughts as well on just sort of the craziness or the unique entertainment value that goes along with the political value of today's or this year's presidential campaigns. 312-981-7200. You can text in kind of your thoughts on like what it is you're seeing and what it all means. You can certainly call in as well. And we're going to talk to Don in just one second. I want to get to some of the text. Someone had mentioned, from the 773, Mitt Romney coming out has nothing to do with dignity, has everything to do with the Republican Party panicking at this point that Donald Trump is still in it. And I think that's 100% true, because they are sort of the point where they didn't think he could get this far. And we talked about it earlier. That maybe even Donald, if he knew that he could do this, maybe he would have done this three campaigns ago.
Sure. When he would have been a younger man, maybe a little bit more energetic.
Well, now he's a little more seasoned,
Sure.
He's developed even more hatred for...
And technology has stepped up, with Twitter and everything else. That's the other thing. I mean, now you say something instantaneously, everyone's got an opinion. It just explodes.
Here's what we've also mentioned is that the rules don't apply to him. He doesn't think he needs to conform to whatever rules are there. They don't apply to him. But also, Dino, you mentioned it too, is normally A campaign or a candidate's extension or reach of their opinion or their message is usually limited to those commercials, right? They've got
right,
all sorts
of tech ads and everything else that come out.
But being, you know, an undeniable, bona fide, you know, celebrity, he's able to, you know, just go ahead and have a press conference, and it's on every TV station around the country. So he gets so much media, plus he just happens to be, you know, incredibly wealthy. Just ask him.
Right.
And so, and also we had a texter in from the 224 that said that he's paying for his own campaign. That's another thing that not all,
right,
almost
most
none.
People aren't going to do that. They're going to get PACs are going to contribute. They're going to have war chests that get, you know, amassed. And, you know, the thing with Trump is it's his own money. He's spending his own money on everything. And it's a different approach because you don't normally see that happen.
Well, and usually when there are either supporters coming in or people financing your campaign, you're on, as they say in the business, kind of your best behavior. You know, you don't want a crazy kind of polarizing situation,
right,
where Donald Trump doesn't care. He's not beholden to anybody, and I think that's part of his appeal,
right?
Is that he's not bought and paid for by special interests.
He doesn't have to worry about who he's going to alienate.
It's like, you know, on the athlete side. So Jay Cutler comes, he's crabby, and people are like, why isn't he more friendly? Well, if it was like the NASCAR drivers where he was wearing a uniform with Snickers and Budweiser
he had to be accountable for the groups that are on his uniform. It would be a little different situation. My thing too is, you know, with this thing with Romney is they were able to get, you know, now with, like I said, the technology, they're able to get an instant response from Trump, like right after that happened. Whereas in the past, you know, you might have had to wait until they, you know, broke away and talked to somebody else. He was on Twitter right after it happened. Or as it was happening, where it wasn't even completed yet.
Until your press person was able to kind of thoughtfully
try to get you in line, and this is what we want our response to be. Well, he doesn't have to worry about it.
No, you're right. You know, everything is immediate now with the format with social media, and Don from Burlington wants to share a little thought on that. Yeah, that's me. I mean, the debates now, it is nonstop. They have, I don't know, 40 of them, right? And it's always happening. Don, welcome to WGN.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Hey, you know, I'm sure I don't have to tell you these so-called debates have turned into basically three-ring circuses.
Yeah.
I mean, the moderators have just let everything go beyond the pale. But, and I just want your thoughts on this, and I've said this for years, debates without an audience. And it brings you back to Nixon and Kennedy, when substance was on the table.
When it was more of the issues as opposed to what kind of inflammatory comments you can make or...
Exactly. It brings to mind the savagery of the Romans in the Colosseum. I mean, the audience wants more and more and more, and hey, these guys feed off it.
Well, Don, you know, you're kind of in the way that it's television, it's ratings. You remember when he threatened to like get out of the debate and it was going to be a big ratings problem for them. And so they'll have as many of them. And I don't know that it's so that the American people can get a better view of whatever the platforms are or their plans. It's probably because they can sell commercials for it, you know, that they're very popular. People watch it.
I agree 100%. I mean, I know they're in business to make money, but the people want facts and maybe they don't. I don't know. maybe I just don't have a handle on the populace right now. But I want facts.
Well, Don, you mentioned when you were talking with Sean a little bit as far as the debate format. Is there something? Because I saw almost what kind of started kind of degrading into sort of a spring where how much time were they actually spending talking about what it is they're going to do as president, and how much time during the debate did they actually spend just insulting each other? Or trying to get the zinger in, you know?
Yep.
I think it goes back to the moderator. He or she has to lay down the law and be firm and just don't let them run roughshod over you. I'm sorry. I just don't think these people are handling it well. And I'm really embarrassed. It's beyond the pale is all I can say.
Well, Don,
and thank you for taking my call.
Oh, no, Don,
really
thanks so much for weighing in. And I think that those are important points because I would think that maybe the debate format, but it depends. Here's the thing, is you've got a double-edged sword. For the networks, it's good TV to have them
argue. Oh, they
want
them on as much as possible. Where, you know, Don was saying almost less is more. Do we need to have them overexposed like that where they're on every 10 days or 2 weeks from a different location talking and arguing with each other over and over again to me, maybe they need to back off. But, you know, TV, the ratings, it won't. Right. They want to have them out there because it's huge ratings and, every time they're on.
And they kind of want them. I mean, I don't want to say kind of. They probably want them arguing. And all, because here we are talking about it. It's crazy stuff. So Jim from Elk Grove is on the line with us. Now, Jim, welcome to WGN.
Hi, good show.
So, well, thanks so much, and you're going to make it even better by explaining some of the thought process as a guy who was, I guess, a Donald Trump supporter, but now you're deciding that you're not?
Yeah, I mean, after that last debate, you know, it's just like a three-ring circus. It's like, you know, I'd say the best alternative would probably be Ted Cruz.
Okay.
He really has the ideas, and he's not going to negotiate on the Constitution or the Second Amendment or, you know. It's getting way out of hand.
Nope. I completely agree. Now, when you were supporting it, and I've got family members that are, you know, and we go the whole gamut, you know, that are really big Trump supporters. And so they like the fact that as far as the change, they like the fact of being, you know, tough on our trade partners and tough on China and pro-America. And then you got to look at the track record of creating jobs, you know, working and succeeding to whatever level people will agree on in the private sector. So is that what you were thinking of when you were supporting Donald Trump? Is it like this is a guy that's that could bring that to the country?
Well, I like that he's a fighter, but then when he talks about these, tariffs and just, you know, I don't know if I want his finger on the button, you know what I'm saying? His demeanor, I don't know. He's just seems so unstable.
No, well, we laughed. But it was maybe more of a nervous laugh because isn't that part of it? Is you think, okay, you can, you know, he's a popular guy and you can be popular enough to win an election. But would you want him? Because he's very thin skinned, right? He gets very upset when people insult him just about normal random things. Imagine if he was actually really mad. Imagine if something happened like a 9/11 or some other thing, you know, God forbid some other tragedy.
Yeah.
And how does he
respond to that? You know, and there's going to be some people going to come down like he should go ahead and nuke everybody. You know, I mean, it takes a village, right? But, you know,
you need someone stable. I mean, he's not, you know, I understand he's never been a politician, but you have to, you have to have your mindset. You can't be so erratic, you know what I'm saying?
I get
more
it.
More level-headed, really, is what we're looking for.
Well, thanks, Jim. We appreciate you weighing in. And, of course, other people can do that, 312-981-7200. Thanks, Jim, so much for it. Now, here's the thing that people are wondering about. Is his choice. Like, who is he? People have said everything from Bill Rancic, one of the Apprentice winners, or, like, who would he choose as his vice presidential running mate? People think,
you know,
because they think to themselves, you usually need to get somebody that's an opposite of yourself, and he is, he's a TV guy, and he is obviously from New York, and so maybe you find someone from a farm in Kansas somewhere, you know, or somebody from California. We've got Ron on the line. Ron, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
Now, Ron, Sean had typed up some of the comments. Are you implying that maybe Bill Clinton would be the perfect vice presidential candidate for Donald Trump?
No, for Hillary.
Oh,
boy.
Wow.
The wife-husband team.
Well, there's nothing in the Constitution that says that couldn't be. And I think a lot of people would be more apt to vote for Hillary if Bill was a vice president.
Well, there's no denying that Bill, regardless of some of the things that came up, was a very, very popular president. And, you know, they're able to point back and Hillary, you know, even though she was first lady at the time, which typically doesn't lend itself to too much of what happens during the presidency. But I think we all agree and know that she's like they're, you know, she's a very intelligent, smart person and was probably, you know, at least talking to him about it, right? So she could say
weighing in on things, certain issues with her opinion. Why not?
So regardless of, you know, she was there, right? So she at least saw it happen, even though she does kind of take credit for the Clinton presidency. That would be strange. What would people, 312-981-7200, what would people think of? Now, this isn't just like you're picking a random, hey, my husband's, you know, pretty sharp guy. I think he'd be a great vice president.
He was a guy that ran the country for 8 years. So, I mean, I don't know how that works. I know two terms is all you get. I don't know. That's kind of a loophole I never really thought about as far as how he would get in you know, God forbid something would happen, would he be president again? I mean,
well, no, but Ron, think about this. Is that as much as Hillary presents like her time as first lady in the White House as valid and valuable political experience, Bill Clinton will be kind of the first man. You know, he'll be the first lady, man style. And so he'll be there. And you know what? He has been on the campaign trail. I'm sure a super valuable asset to her. So he's already helping her.
Oh, well, he definitely is. But wouldn't you feel a lot more comfortable with Hillary if Bill was right there as a vice president? And there's nothing in the Constitution or anywhere to prevent him from doing that.
I don't know.
Yeah. There's some skepticism. I don't know.
It's just like a little too much all in the family. You know, I don't know. What would Chelsea do? Would she be like secretary of something? Well, so think of another one. And I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit, Ron, on both sides.
If it wasn't Bill, who would it be?
Think of another one. Number one, like if it isn't Bill, like who would be a good running mate for Hillary? And then number two, you could be a little devil's advocate here, but who do you think Donald Trump is going to pick?
I have no idea who Trump is going to pick, and Trump frightens me very much.
You're not alone in that decision there.
He's going to say to all the citizens he doesn't like, you're fired. I'm just kidding. He won't do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll say good night, and we'll see if your audience has any comments about Bill being a vice president.
They do. Thanks, Ron. Thanks so much for the call. And yeah, people are texting and saying that technically it would be, he says it wouldn't be, you know, impossible for him to be vice president, but if something unfortunately would happen to her, he would have to be president again.
Now, I don't know. What, did he skip him and go right to the next person?
I think you
line?
Just make him like chief of staff, or you just make him.
Right, as an advisor, just exactly what he's been probably during the campaign.
312-981-7200, you can text in your thoughts just on the crazy political landscape, what you think is going to happen. Who do you think should be the vice presidential kind of candidates along with our front runners here? That would be great. It is Dave Neal. It's like the marching band Mission Impossible theme.
Gotta get to work.
720 WGN. It is Dave Neal in the Allstate Showcase studio along with Tino Tiberi to my right, Sean Davis in the booth. And we are having people, you know, just as we're, you know, surprised, shocked, slightly like embarrassed of some of the things that are going on, but certainly entertained. 312-981-7200, the political scene that's happening, the debates, especially on the GOP side, but also like on the Democratic side.
A little bit more tame on that side, you know, as really it's a two-person show right now.
But still interesting, and maybe I never paid attention that much before, and Bernie Sanders is one of those, and it comes up every couple elections where you get this candidate who is, you know, everything that you never thought on paper could get, you know, I'm a socialist, right? You know, and he's like, who's the one that can beat he's right here. You know, you know, where Larry David makes it.
Sure.
He does an excellent job kind of portraying him. So and you have him, but what he has stood for and what his campaign is all about has surprisingly like resonated with so many people. That I think Hillary Clinton is surprised.
Well, she was a little.
She's
sure
feeling
she
the
was,
burn.
Absolutely, I think. Although the Super Tuesday results didn't really reflect that, as Hillary had, you know, won the majority of the states that day. He has to be concerned a little bit about, you know, Bernie and where things are going to go from here. So we'll see what happens.
Well, we're talking a little bit of Trump stuff too, and all the things that make him great, you know, and all the things that also make him kind of an uneasy choice for some Republicans. We do have Lance on the line. Lance, welcome to WGN.
How you doing today? I just want to say the Republican Party created this monster because they took their party to the extreme. They started talking this crazy talk, and they allowed these politicians to raise the bar on craziness. Now, there was a time when the Republican Party would not have wanted Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio to be president. But now they're willing to settle for that guy because the guy who's winning is even crazier than they are. So they created this monster, and they allow their party to speak these words, to say insulting things, to do criminal things, and they condone it. And so now everything is coming back on them now, and they want to play the game like we had nothing to do with this. They had everything to do with this because they were disrespectful. They were condescending. They were nasty. And to this president that's off right now, they did a lot of things that was just not right. And now it's coming to roost, and they have to deal with it right now because now they have this guy who's running for president, Donald Trump, and he's appealing to the ugly side of the society, people who feel like someone is taking something from them. Now, in a general election, he's not going to have a chance because most of America don't feel like there's someone that's taking something from them. They may feel like they don't have opportunity, but there's a difference between not having opportunity and having something taken away. Well, and so when he gets into the general election, he's not going to have a chance.
Well, Lance, I wanted to ask you, too, and there's usual typical checks and balances that go in that make something like what is happening with Donald Trump impossible. Usually you have to have just an insane amount of money in order to be able to mount a realistic presidential campaign or support. And so you're always kind of trying to be reasonable and trying to appeal to as many people as possible. Do you think, is there anybody else out there, really? I mean, any one individual out there that could, you know, mount a candidacy for president in the next election or in the future that would do it? Or is this really like one moment in time where this particular guy is the only one that could do it?
Well, there's one gentleman who said that he's not going to allow Donald Trump to be president. That's Mike Bloomberg. He said, I'll run before I allow Donald Trump to be president.
And that's a guy who could match your money-wise. There's no question about
that. Exactly. So you know, me personally, I would love to see Donald Trump to be president because that way you can shut all these crazy folks up because they somehow believe that you have to be crazy. You have to be nasty to be a president. And I'm just looking around at some of the things that I've said, and I'm like, how are people accepting these things? The Republican Party is the only party that can have people to vote against their own interests. You have homosexuals voting against homosexuals. You have people voting against civil rights, African-Americans voting against civil rights. You have it's a mad party. It's like it's like the party is everything. It's like they're not American. They're Republican.
Well, that's what it seems like. You know what? I know that you don't want to, you know, paint with a broad brush like that because it takes a village, and it is like the whole, I think just like the vast landscape of opinions, and you're right, Lance, there are every bit of one of those things in the party at some point or another. And I'm sure on the Democratic side, there's all sorts of individuals that have different opinions and they don't share like, you know, basic general opinions with the masses. I get it.
I was speaking in terms of the party in general, not the people who vote for the party. I'm speaking of the party, the Washington-based party, how they view themselves as Republicans before they view themselves as Americans, because if they view themselves as Americans, they wouldn't do this. They wouldn't do to the country the things that they are doing to the country.
Well, Lance, one thing I do agree with you on is that there has been a situation that has been created that they are not, that the party itself, like you're saying, is not comfortable with, right? And that some leaders of that party or prominent Republicans are not comfortable with. So I appreciate your call. I appreciate you weighing in here on WGN.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. I mean, you think about Mike Bloomberg. This is a guy that I have met on a number of occasions, and that sounds really good. That sounds like a really nice. This is a guy who
has experience.
He was been there. He was the mayor of New York, you know, after 9/11, you know, but had to deal with a lot of those issues as New York kind of got ready to be really fully embracing the fact that they're a target on the Homeland Security side. He is a guy that has been a successful businessman, right? I don't think he accepted a salary, and you know, he's a very wealthy guy, so he's got all the wealthiness, right, that you'd want from a Donald Trump. No, but he's actually been elected to something.
Profile, yep, and he's actually had experience running something. So it's as opposed to Donald Trump, besides running his businesses.
312-981-7200. You can go ahead and text some of those things in as far as your thoughts on the political landscape, and we'll definitely get to that as well, and your text. And then coming up, we're going to be talking some food stuff, too. We're going to talk to Michael Simon, Iron Chef from The Chew. We're going to talk to Katie Lee. We're going to get back into the presidential thing with their favorite drinks. Everybody can agree on that.
Hey, this is Mike Simon, and you are listening to Dane at WGN. Love is a burning thing.
720 WGN. Dane Neal here at the 2016 South Beach Wine and Food Festival at the Crown Jewel, the singular event, the one that means the most to me, that has meat, live music, fire. It is Meatopia, and the guy who is making it all happen from the MC side and also from the inspiration side. This is a carnivore himself. It's the one and only Chef Michael Simon. Welcome to the show.
Oh, it's good to be here, baby.
Now, you have been a part of these events for a long time, and you were friends with Josh Ozersky. I was friends with Josh Ozersky. It is hard to think, and like you mentioned up on stage just a little bit ago, you've been to a lot of events like this, but there are very few that really embody the spirit of an individual like this one does.
I agree. I mean, this event embodies Josh and everything that he loved about food. And I love that that even though he's not with us anymore, it's kept that feel, that core, the live fire, the meat, the party that he would evoke when he walked into a room.
Now, food festivals all over the place. South Beach is one of those that everybody, the food kind of world, congregates here, not only for the weather, right, but also for great camaraderie and then also for great events. Now, this event here, for those people who have never been to a Meatopia, what is it about it that makes it absolutely different?
Well, you know what? I think it's like this is an event for the people that, obviously for the people that come and eat here, it's an event for them. But really, this is food that chefs love to cook. So it's really an event that the chefs really, I think, pour their hearts out into. And they cook a little bit for themselves. But then the consumer really gets to enjoy the food that chefs are so passionate about.
It is. It is like a pro event. It isn't just a food event for the people. It is the chefs cooking for themselves and for each other. And you see a lot of that where they're talking about, hey, man, this is incredible. But it's chef to chef.
Right. Absolutely. It's the chefs are cheering. Like, they're picking a winner this year, which, you know, is kind of funny because I feel like all the chefs cheer for each other in an event like this. Everybody, there's no losers here.
So when it comes to the team photo of excellence, obviously you're there and leading the crowd here. But as far as some of the great places that people are going to enjoy, and they come from all over the country, what are some of your favorites?
Well, I mean, you know, he's a friend, but I'm always a huge fan. What Pat Martin does with smoked meat, there ain't many, if maybe none better in the country. So he brought the whole darn rig. He's got whole hogs going. I mean, he's tearing it up tonight. But, I mean, there's just so much. You could go on and on. Really, all 25 places here are unbelievable.
Josh had high hopes for this event in New York, started it, and it came from just kind of like a backyard field kind of thing all the way to one of these kind of main events at some of the best food festivals. So New York and South Beach here where we are today. Where do you see, like as a guy who's been and seen everything, where do you see, can Meatopia be in other places?
Yeah, I mean, I think this event works anywhere, to be honest with you. But I kind of like that you could only get it twice a year. I mean, I think there's something special about it in that sense, too. It's like two times a year, chefs get together and they throw down and cook some of the best meat that they can. And there's something kind of special about that.
Well, there is. I don't think there's more of a meaty town than Cleveland, right? Oh, and who could bring that? Oh. I mean, maybe a Cleveland Meatopia?
Yeah, we could host the Cleveland Meatopia, no problem. We might have to bring like 100 chefs because Clevelanders love their meat so much.
Now, they're going to love one place that you're doing that is going to be one of the new ones in that roster of restaurants people are going to come to Cleveland for with Mabel's opening up. So how excited are you for that?
Very. We're a couple weeks away now, and I mean, it's great. Smokers are in. We're playing around, having a good time, and, you know, it's a passion project for me. So I really can't wait for it to open. I'm more excited about opening Mabel's than any restaurant I've ever done.
Long awaited, and it's going to be super appreciated. And last thing, this meat, it doesn't cut itself. And you have your new line of Ergo Chef knives out on the market now. I know those guys. I know they do great stuff. I've talked with you about it before. Right. But now that you've been, like, you know, a few months in, 6 months, how are they working out?
Oh, we're happy. I mean, you know, I think we did a knife that is of a chef quality knife, but affordable for the home consumer. Right. And I mean, I couldn't be happier with them. I got them in hands of a lot of my chef friends. They love them. I think the knife speaks for itself, and very proud of them.
I'm not going to let you enjoy Meatopia and all that it is. For people who want to keep up with all your adventures, all your projects, where can they go?
Yeah, they could go to my Twitter page at Chef Simon or my Facebook page at Michael D. Simon. That keeps most things updated, and I have a website, michaelsimon.com. It'll be on one of those damn things.
See him in the Chew 5 nights a week in Cleveland all the time and here at Meatopia. Chef Michael Simon, thanks so much for being in the show.
Thanks for having me, man.
So Michael Simon, you do see him on the ABC, you know, 5 days a week on the Chew. But it's such a big meat guy and such a big part of Meatopia. He had actually hosted it out in New York. And then, of course, and then Guy Fieri, another Friend of ours was actually did it last year in Florida, and we were working to bring it. Josh and I were working to bring that event to Chicago, make it kind of part of Chicago Gourmet when he and he passed away before he could do that. But it's great to see the event, like, you know, moving forward.
Right.
For those people that don't know who Josh Ozersky was, like, I've done a number of interviews with him. I even tried to get him on one of these late overnight things. He had done a pilot. Well, it was like a show for the Smithsonian Channel called like the History, like America's World of Drinking or something like that. And it would be tough to get him to like wake up. He was like, I'm going to do it, Dane. And then he, Dan Segrew, one of the great producers here, kept trying to call him, and he was like completely passed out and asleep. So, so our thoughts and prayers go out to his family again, and it was so great to be able to see that event happen again. Exciting stuff. So on the presidential side, then also on the food side, when we come back, we are going to talk about every U.S. president's favorite drink if Donald Trump becomes president someday. Who knows? I'm not saying that'll be the best thing or the worst thing. It could be great. Who knows? If he becomes president, of course, his favorite drink would be Trump water, right? Probably. Doesn't he have his own line of water?
Well, it's not vodka, that's for sure.
Is there a Trump vodka?
That business went down the drain.
We'll talk about all that stuff. We're going to go through some. You'll be surprised by some. I think you'll be amused by others. It's Daniel in 720 WGN. Daniel in the Allstate Showcase Studio until 5 a.m. Dino, I know what you're thinking based on Brittany and Elliot, Chicago's best balls.
That sounds like a can't miss right there.
Everybody loves a good meatball. They're good.
No
Remember
question.
Giacchino's?
Oh, yeah, there's no question. That was a great meatball
The problem with those is that they looked so beautiful that people would not eat them. They would just put them on the mantle and enjoy them as kind of, you know, whatever, like interior decorating.
That's a tremendous looking display you have of meatballs that are uneaten.
Well, and they didn't necessarily say meatballs. I'm thinking it is meatballs. But as we get into every U.S. president's favorite drink, I'm wondering if we'll see a highball in here somewhere.
You might. I'm going to imagine you're going to see it in there somewhere.
Well, there are a lot of presidents, more than I thought of. We're not going to get to all of them. We'll get to some of the highlights. So maybe a Grover Cleveland. You may not get a mention here today, unless, of course, it's an interesting drink. George Washington, father of the country. What do you think his preferred drink was? Quickly.
Vodka.
They probably didn't have vodka. It didn't even exist.
Let me think for a second. No idea. Drawing a complete blank on that one.
You're like, you know, he loved a rum runner, Dane. No, it was, he loved a dark porter. Yeah. First president of the United States loved dark porter beer. He would lace it with molasses. So a little bit of craft brew action there for Mr. Washington. John Adams liked a hard cider, right?
Sure. And who doesn't?
Those are pretty good these days. Thomas Jefferson was more of a wine guy.
Yeah. What kind? Did he have a specialty, or was it just wine in general?
Of course, Jefferson's love of expensive wines and large purchases brought him to the brink of financial ruin, so he loved it a little too much, at least for the bank account.
Exactly.
James Madison loved champagne. This is a guy who celebrated.
My God, there's nothing like having a glass of champagne in the White House.
Monroe, French red wine. John Quincy Adams, a Spanish Madeira. He enjoyed that. Some of this stuff had to be hard to get because, remember, they didn't have, we weren't blessed with Binnie's like we are today. Because, you know, Binnie's has all that. They probably have a whole aisle like presidential collection.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I would have to agree with that.
Andrew Jackson enjoyed a little bit of
beer,
whiskey.
Oh,
yes.
Boy, I'm way off tonight.
Just like Rick Kogan. Well, one time I had the great folks from Goose Island in here, and I had some really exciting, I mean, it's awesome beers that they were bringing in, and some of the things that they do is pretty cool. Over at Argo Tea was there, and I still had I saw Rick Kogan. And Rick Kogan, of course, longtime personality here, beloved personality for WGN. And
absolutely,
I said, Rick, there's some, Goose Island's got some great beer. And he's like, Dane. I don't like beer. I'm like, really? Because I didn't know anyone who really just doesn't like beer. You know,
and he just doesn't like it at all.
He goes, I'm a hard liquor guy. And I'm like, okay.
And some people, that's the way they go.
Yeah. So he would definitely enjoy Andrew Jackson. And then Martin Van Buren, also whiskey. William Henry Harrison with the hard cider. So I'm trying to see if there's anything kind of interesting.
How about some current presidents? Those are... Those are ones from way back when.
You mean like a Millard Fillmore, perhaps? Abe Lincoln. Now, this is Honest Abe, and how did he keep such a steady hand on the country in those turbulent times? It's because his preferred drink was water.
What did Richard Nixon enjoy?
Let's see.
What was his favorite drink?
Chester A. Arthur. Wow, that's a guy that doesn't get enough presidential love.
Well, I think it was in one of the Die Hard movies, Dane. There was a mention of he was a 26th president.
Well, 26 was Theodore Roosevelt.
Oh, it was a bad guess.
He loved a mint julep.
21st president, actually.
But how can you know, mint julep is one of those things, you know, let's say it's the Kentucky Derby.
Right, I think that's what I think when you say mint julep. I don't think of anything else but that.
Do you know you have your big floppy hat on, right, and you're holding a mint julep?
Yeah, right.
But it's not the kind of thing you can enjoy on a regular basis. Just
no.
Like, I'll have another mint julep, please.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
I don't think so. Okay, so William Howard Taft loved champagne. Woodrow Wilson with scotch, that's kind of, it's not recent, but it's...
Well, it's at least in the 1900s.
You've moved out of paintings and into photographs.
Right.
Franklin D. Roosevelt assorted cocktails. He could not be, you know, just defined by one. Herbert Hoover loved a martini.
And who doesn't?
Here you go. If you ever think JFK wasn't, you know, all about enjoying himself and partying, Bloody Mary was his favorite.
Well, that's a great way to start the morning, Dane.
And Lyndon B. Johnson, I did mention Cutty Sark.
Cutty Sark.
He enjoyed a Cutty Sark in a giant big gulp size.
I like to have my Cutty Sark when I get up in the morning.
Richard Nixon, expensive red wine. Gerald Ford, martinis. Jimmy Carter, what are you thinking? Like a peanut liqueur?
Beer.
Oh, that's right.
Billy Beer.
That's right. He didn't like. He liked white wine. Ronald Reagan liked wine. George Bush. I said it was a frosty glass of milk. Is that he would like?
Oh, the first Bush, George Bush. Yeah.
Yes, the first. Right. The original.
The original.
Yeah. He loves beer and also vodka martinis. I would have thought milk, just because he seems so like not gonna do it.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. But you know, he's got to have something to unwind. Milk doesn't usually do the job too much, but why not?
Bill Clinton. Preferred drink? Any guesses?
I got to believe, not vodka, I'm going to say that again.
Sean, any guess? And I know you printed it out, but I don't know if you read through them all. Any guess?
Scotch. Or bourbon.
Let's see. We got... we'll have to figure out how to... There we go. Are you there? Oh, no. Sorry, Sean. I don't know how to do that. So, Bill Clinton, the snake bite. I don't even know what that is. Is that like Everclear or something?
Yeah, it's a mixed drink.
Do you really know, Dino?
I don't know what it is, but I've seen people drinking
okay.
it.
Okay. George W. Bush. Now, here is the guy that followed through. He didn't like the milk, but he did like Diet Cola was his preferred drink. And then Brock enjoys a beer. Remember the beer summit?
Yes, I do.
There we go.
He's in. There he is.
The so button was stuck on my side.
So, Sean, did you know what snake bite is? Do you know what that is?
No, I don't.
Okay.
No, I don't.
You have to look that up on the
don't
next
have to
break.
Look anything up, Dino. 312-981-7200.
Now, Guy, what do you think about this from a historical standpoint, right? You look at the drinks and you look at the presidents that probably went through some of the most stressful times in our history.
They were hitting it hard back then.
No, but listen, like Sean is a voice of reason here because... And these are things that are well known, you know, and long time noted that these are the things. Yeah, right? Because you look at the presidents, the photos when they come in, 8 years later, 4 years later when they come out. It's just
aging
like,
horribly.
Yeah. And so it's nice to see that President Obama just enjoys beer. It's nice to see the water situation. But, you know, occasionally you got to kick back and have a...
You might have to have a stiff drink now and then a real one instead of just a beer.
And you wonder, too, and we've been letting people or having the listeners kind of weigh in, whether it's text or phone calls, 312-981-7200, on their thoughts as far as, and I'm sure there's some over drinks, right, some through the staff and the campaign staff, a consideration on who should be the vice president.
Right.
You know, because you want somebody that's going to compliment you, that's going to bring you votes you wouldn't have otherwise. Of course, Donald Trump probably figures he's got fans.
Well, if it was up to Trump, he would be the president and the vice president together. He wouldn't even have anybody. He would just run himself.
So here's some of them. So Mark Cuban is one of the ones that's mentioned as a...
There's another guy with a big ego.
Well, no, but that would be a good vice president. Someone had mentioned Yosemite Sam. Of course, that's not possible. someone had said that Hillary and Bernie. And someone had said, like, maybe... Bernie Sanders and Howard Stern would be a good... I don't know if these are super serious. But and some of the policies that people could have that would take some of the acrimony out of the presidential situation and bring in some of the positive things. People, you know, if I've got a platform, you know, you always hear that whole the chicken in every pot. right? Yeah. Like, what is it you could say to people that they would, I think, universally enjoy? And one of the texters from the 606, not sure what that is, Donald Trump put Saturday morning cartoons back in the air to improve everyone's attitude, and I have to concur.
The country's never been the same ever since they pulled those. I don't... I'm not sure. That's an interesting comment he made there.
Yeah. Well, so let's give it a tiny bit of thought. And, of course, we'll take your text and calls, 312-981-7200, on the potential running mates for them that would complement it. You know, and how do you put Humpty back together on the Republican side? Do you think that Trump goes with – I mean, how can you just – I know they always – they argue and they fight. And to a certain extent, you know, they name call and accuse and talk about how the other person is unacceptable. But at the end – everybody hugs each other, and they pick somebody that's kind of in the ranks, and then they sort of move forward.
And they all fall behind the person that ends up being the nominee. But this time, I'm not so sure that's going to be the case. I mean, they have to from a political party standpoint, but, I mean, there's been some nasty stuff going around in this one, even more so, I think, than in the past. They've really been doing some digging in each other, and we'll see what happens.
So do you think that Donald Trump chooses somebody from the political arena to give – even though he doesn't seem as though he values that and, of course, is excited about being, you know, a change, someone from the outside coming in. But does he pick somebody that's an established candidate? And then who? I don't think you can take, based on what they've all said, I don't think he can choose
someone that's currently running against him.
Or maybe John Kasich is the only sensible one.
Yeah, he has to take someone that's been in the political arena only for the experience factor because he doesn't have any. And, you know... more critically, he's going to have to pick cabinet members also that, you know, if you know, we're getting way ahead of ourselves thinking he's going to win this, but
are we?
Or maybe we aren't.
We're only slightly ahead of ourselves, I think, at this point.
But, I mean, you know, you've got to pick the cabinet. You know, there's a lot of other things that are going to have to be done once that happens. And you want to have someone who's been through the war, so to speak, to know, you know, what's going on. And I think he realizes that. I mean, but who you pick, maybe you go with someone like Kasich who's not going to be controversial. It's like the opposite of what he is. So
I love the listeners. They are absolutely hilarious. And although, you know, from a constructive and advice standpoint for the candidates, I don't know how valuable it is to say Yosemite Sam because he's a fictional animated character who I think from a temperament standpoint is even a little bit more unstable, right,
than Trump.
Than people have complained about Donald Trump. Right. But a texter from the 847 says, how about, and you just kind of, you know, put your hat on here, you know, your thinking cap, if you will, if you remember that from like Romper Room or something.
Right.
Imagine Bernie Sanders as the presidential candidate with Larry David as Bernie Sanders as the vice president. Because it's all the things you love about Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
And then you also have even more.
Right. So if something were to happen to the real Bernie Sanders, you'd have the...
it's almost like having...
the de facto Bernie Sanders right behind him.
Like, you're looking at him. He's the guy. Well, we did talk a little bit earlier in the segment about some of the favorite drinks that... that the presidents have loved throughout the years, a spirit that is coming up. We're going to talk about this and with them when we get done with this break, but Few Spirits. Have you ever heard of Few? It's FEW. They're out of Evanston, relatively, I don't want to say relatively new, but within the last probably like 5-6 years as far as on the scene as one of, but they are now one of the top rye whiskeys, Whiskey Advocate, number one craft spirit. Have you ever heard of them?
I have not. I've been looking forward to hearing more about it.
So when Dino does, and those rare occasions, and of course, always in moderation, when you sit down and relax with a whiskey drink, what do you choose?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, when I have any kind of hard alcohol, it's probably...
It's
you know, maybe Jim Beam, you know, an established. I don't really go off the grid too much when it comes to that stuff.
So you're like the,
it's pretty straight laced
like
for
the
me.
Familiar embrace
yeah,
of a Jim Beam.
You know,
Beam.
The names you know. That's kind of where I go there. But I'm certainly willing to try other alternatives.
So they're one of them, and so they have partnered up with the Drake Hotel. Have you ever been to the Drake Hotel?
I have.
You were there obviously for the high tea.
Of course, well, of course I was. Now I've been there for a wedding a couple of times, and it's been a little while though. I haven't been there recently.
Oh, actually, we've got Mark Karlinski coming up. He's going to help us continue some of our presidential talk. A little later in the program, though, we're going to talk with Paul Hletko and Lynn Simonetti from the Drake about the things they're doing, the whiskey clubs. If you want to be like a certain amount of presidents, right? Yeah. And get into a club, you know, and then also have one of the best spirits. Stay tuned for that. Right. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to have Mark Zielinski. He is going to talk about some of the politics going on and hopefully give, we've done the 10,000 foot view. We've done the stunned viewer of the television, not knowing what's going on.
Right.
And of course, 312-981-7200. The listeners have texted and called in their thoughts as well. Thank you for the Yosemite Sam references. I loved it. WGN, Daniel in the Allstate Showcase studio until 5 o'clock. Sean Davis in the booth. Dino Tiberi to my right as we kind of make sense of, or not, or just, you know, look on in awe and disbelief at the political landscape and everything that's happening, whether it's the debates, whether it's just the conversations, whether it's what's Trump going to say next. We got a Facebook friend who had basically said that when Bob Dole came out, and I think
I'm Bob Dole,
and said that maybe he wasn't a big fan of Donald Trump. And we remember Donald saying that when John McCain was brought up, that he prefers his war heroes to not be captured, that maybe Donald Trump would say that in relation to Bob Dole, that he prefers his World War II veterans to not be injured. Like, I prefer World War II heroes that weren't injured. I'm done. Well, you know, it's all been very interesting, and a guy that's going to help us at least get a different viewpoint and maybe make some sense of some of it is on the line with us now. It's Mark Karlinski, is the editor-in-chief of the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin. Mark, welcome to WGN.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for waking up. And we're kind of looking at all this, and it seems as though this kind of thing has never happened before. We've had some texters text in that back in, you know, whenever they did this, that this kind of thing has happened. Obviously a little different. You're injecting, you know, social media and just the 24-hour news cycle. But as a guy who, you know, has your hand on the pulse of so much, is this different? Is this new? Is this something we haven't seen before?
I mean, the sense that I get is that this is obviously the social media and with the TV going constantly and every candidate getting their own platform. It's definitely different. As far as seeing major political shifts in parties, those happen every few generations, and I don't know whether or not we'll see this one as a major shift. I think that we'll have to look back in history and tell that. But I think part of the issue that you see here is because of the way media has fragmented. It's no longer as simple as reading your city's newspaper or watching two or three local TV stations or two or three radio stations. People can kind of pick and choose where and how they receive their information, and it sort of creates these echo chambers where people can sort of self-select who they want, the facts that they want, and so, you know, the people who are supposed to be having these political conversations, oftentimes they're not even looking at the same set of facts, and it makes them very suspicious of the other side. It makes them very unwilling to compromise. You know, we're in a world now where the idea that you compromise with the other side is seen as a weakness in governing. And you know, I think a lot of people find that to be a very scary idea when your goal as an elected official is to actually reach a compromise and get a result done, yeah. More so than just winning the debate of the day.
So my way or the highway attitude really right now.
Exactly. And I think that's a bigger thing than Trump. Obviously, him being the master marketer that he is, certainly more than a master statesman, it's looking, he's able to get his message out there and find the right people who like it. He's motivating people who may not have otherwise come out for an election, and that makes him very unpredictable. But I think even in a broader sense, you're finding that the way elections have gone at smaller elections, you know, looking at members of Congress or members of state legislatures, you're seeing that there's less middle ground. And there's a few factors at play there, but generally the two sides don't talk to each other. They've got less trust in each other than they've ever had before. And so it's the election is, you know, so concerned about purity to a party or who can be the most extreme to one end or the other,
right,
with less consideration of who can win the people in the middle in November.
You know, but that and Mark, no, you bring it up, and that's usually what it is, right? You know, the primaries are usually kind of, hey, kind of consolidate your base, you know, but don't get too far off to the fringe, because eventually you're going to have to be the president for all the people.
Right.
You know,
you have to walk back your statements that you won the base and win the middle without being accused of, you know, what the wording was, flip-flopping, or, you know, yesterday, I guess with Trump, he said he's flexible on certain things. Flexibility is not necessarily always a bad thing. You know, you want leaders to evaluate decisions and change them.
Well, you said something really refreshing, is that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, they're being obviously hired, you know, through an you know, elective process, but being hired to do a job, which is to keep things going, keep the, you know, keep the army working, keep the economy flowing, keep, you know, social services going, keep the government working. And when you get to where it's just such, you know, the purpose is more to like stand your ground and be an ideologue, and even if it shuts the whole government down, that is something that you're seeing more and more of, and they're having some kind of success at it as well. I wanted to ask you if you are surprised. And, you know, Donald Trump over the last, you know, handful of presidential elections has kind of pawed at it and said he was thinking about it, never got in, or that instead of, and I thought when he got into it this time that he was going to have to somehow adjust, you know, use his strengths, which are, I guess, his bank account and then his celebrity, to be able to still conform to what will be a presidential election process. Instead, he has changed it where all the other candidates have kind of conformed to a reality show format.
Right. He's kind of steamrolled the process, and I don't know if this is something that he kind of just lucked into, but the notion that that somehow throwing away what, you know, some would call political correctness, what others might call, you know, expectations of basic decency in a political discussion, that's somehow become an asset for him, that he has no filter. And that, I don't think there's any precedent in modern history for someone who is actually elevating themselves by being rude and, you know,
and just saying whatever he wants to say.
Right. I mean, he does this, you know, he takes on the Pope and his numbers go up, and he takes on.
Right.
I know, we couldn't figure out. We were talking about that earlier today.
Right. And so it's an interesting dynamic here where, for his base, he can do no wrong. There's nothing that he so far has said that has said to them, you know what, we're done. Obviously, the Republican establishment, and the people who are actually in office, and, you know, a lot of it too are people who are going to have to be Republican candidates further down the ballot in November.
Well,
people who have to win their own race, and if he's going to be kind of toxic on them, on their party brand, they have a good reason to be nervous.
Well, at least at this point, a lot of the decisions he's made have been reinforced by increasing poll numbers and popularity. On the Republican side, you know, he's quite a bit ahead, but when they kind of do those polls, say like if he did win and he was going against either Bernie Sanders or Hillary, that it would be much, much closer. Now, do you think with that choice of, and usually that's what candidates do, is they try to pick somebody who will compliment them, be all the things that they're not, or give them inroads into a base that they don't have. I think this is a very important decision for him. Like, who do you think that he thinks of? Does he think he's got to find somebody that likes or will tolerate him, or that he likes? Or is he going to just go straight, like, this is a person that will help? And will that person accept it? We see Chris Christie, and we've had some texters come in, you know, saying that there's a motivation. But, like, Chris Christie, he just didn't look like he wanted to be there.
I mean, I don't think he looks like he wanted to be there because he wanted to be the guy giving the victory speech on Super Tuesday. But I would say Chris Christie is one of those people who might be on that list. He might also be gunning for something like attorney general. He touted his prosecution chops very many times over the course of the campaign. But what you'll find with Trump is because he's so big on this brand of being brash and out there and outsider, I don't know whether he's going to want to put an insider in that position. And I think a lot of political strategists have sort of made that as a recommendation to people who are building a presidential ticket, that, you know, essentially the job of the vice president, to the degree that it actually is a real job, is to be in charge of operating the U.S. Senate. And they act as a tiebreaker in the case that there's a 50-50 split. And in a case like what we see with Vice President Biden now, there's a lot of times where he, you know, goes back, and he has a lot of contacts in the Senate from decades and decades working there.
Right.
And he can sort of hammer out deals sort of in a go-between between the legislative branch and the executive branch. And so I think that would be a smart policy move for a Trump presidency, to go with someone who's been in office, who's, you know, a career politician, in his words. But the challenge with that is he's been using the phrase career politician,
right,
kind of as a smear.
Right. That's contradictory.
And so it's a tricky thing in that, you know, you can build your whole team with outsiders, and maybe that wins and people feel better about throwing, you know, the established people out. But there's a very steep learning curve to governing. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily hurt to have people who know how the process works, even if you don't like the results that they've had. You should hold people accountable, but I think a lot of people, you know, lose appreciation for the actual process that goes into making law. And I think a lot of times that can only be learned through being involved in some form of government.
In some form.
Beforehand.
Yeah. Right,
you know, a library board, school board, something. Before you become president of the United States.
I know. I mean, even just for that process of how things happen, you know, how you know, the bill, and Dino and I were joking around about a little Schoolhouse Rock, you know, maybe that could be the tutorial. You know, I'm just a bill. Why don't you watch it? And nothing against that, but again, he has been and he has a lot of supporters, and there's certainly something to be said about change and all that. And all that, but he's been reinforced by all the behavior. So you couldn't tell him he's doing it wrong, because obviously he's ahead, right?
He's doing the campaign. You know, obviously you can't argue with the results of the presidential, the primary system for him and how he's done. He's won. I want to say it was 8 states so far, and you know, it's looking like the way things are headed that he's going to get at least a simple majority of all the delegates who are going to go to the Republican convention in Cleveland this summer. And really, that's all he needs. He doesn't need, everyone else's support. You heard yesterday, and I don't know if this is, you know, a totally valid argument, but you heard Senator Cruz talk about how, you know, at best, Trump wins 30% of the vote in any of these races he's winning, because they're split in however many ways from however many candidates are on that ballot.
Right.
And Cruz had this conclusion that means that 7 out of 10 voters have chosen that they don't want you as president. And I don't know if that's true. Just because you've picked one name doesn't necessarily mean you wouldn't be okay with the other. But, you know, his goal is not to cast as wide a net as, you know, to make everyone happy. He just needs to get enough people in there. Even if it's coming at the expense of traditional Republican voters, he's bringing in people who may not have ever showed up at a caucus site in Iowa or at a polling place in other states. So it makes it hard to predict, I think, for a lot of people.
It'll be interesting to see. And even if he does, and, you know, there's always a handful of celebrities that kind of, you know, because of just the influence they have in their own minds, they're thinking, maybe I should run for office someday. And a lot of times it never gets past, you know, whether it's a George Clooney or whether it's an Oprah or something.
Reagan was a Hollywood actor. That was his base. So it's not unheard of.
Yeah, but he was governor of California before.
Right.
You know, he was a political person. No, I get all that, but you know, the rules are all crazy and changed. So we're going to give that some thought. Plus, I want to get your thoughts when we come back from this break on the Supreme Court and the situation with the death of the justice and how they're going to handle that, because that is another one of those political footballs. It is Mark Karlinski. He's the editor-in-chief of the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin. We're talking with him about politics, how it all handles, and kind of some of the things we're seeing on the presidential side, and going to talk some Supreme Court. It's Daniel Inn on 720 WGN. WGN, Dane Neal in the Allstate Showcase Studio. We do have Dino Tiberi to my right, Sean Davis in the booth on the line with us, joining us, talking a little bit about some of the political things that we're seeing and experiencing on the presidential side, and also some of the other things that are kind of play into the decision making, and just some of the things that make sense, I think, even in the campaign, where people are saying, well, here's what I would do, or here's what should happen as far as the Supreme Court situation. We've got Mark Karlinski, editor-in-chief for Chicago Daily Law Bulletin. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You know, whenever a Supreme Court justice appointment is available, I mean, that is one of the most, I think, probably one of the most important functions that a president has, right? Because it set so much precedent as far as the policy of either that political affiliation, that, you know, that mindset. And here we have at this time in kind of a tweener time period with Antonin Scalia.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think it's, you know, I'm kind of, you know, obviously the circumstances of someone dying are not the best way to have it, but it is nice for, you know, someone like me and for people at my publication who cover the courts to see the judicial branch part of the discussion as part of the election and come in as sort of a topic here. And it's certainly one of the most underrated roles that the president plays, in that it is a lifetime appointment for whoever they choose. You have a president who is going to step down from his position in January, but he already has 2 of 9 seats filled with people in their, you know, they're middle-aged. They presumably could keep that job for 20, 30 more years, whether they choose to retire or they choose to live out the rest of their life in office. And he's going to have a chance at a third. You know, you look at someone like Scalia with a Reagan appointee, it gives these presidents a way to shape their legacy long after they're out of office, in some cases long after even the president themselves die. And then, you know, in addition, with someone like Obama, who's had, you know, a lot of very controversial legislation since he came into office in 2009, a lot of those cases are now trickling into the courts. And by him having his own appointees there, it sort of helps him bolster and uphold a lot of these controversial laws. So there's a lot at stake for him and his legacy to, you know, take advantage of this opportunity to move the court a little bit more towards the left in his position. Obviously, Scalia was sort of the anchor of the right side of this court, which has been, you know, pretty evenly balanced for the, you know, the current era. We've had 4 justices who sort of are on the left side, who are, tend to vote or align more with Democrats. You've got the 4 on the right who align more with Republican causes, and you've got Justice Anthony Kennedy, who is a Republican appointee, but tends to be what they would call the swing vote, and he certainly has carried his weight one way or the other. And so there's a lot at stake here.
Well, do you think that in some of the talk where, hey, he shouldn't even, and these are from people, you know, relatively high positions that say, like, he shouldn't even appoint anybody. He should hold off and wait until after the election. But it's, you know, we're talking almost a year away. So he has to do something. Does a president, does he take into consideration the fact that it could get blocked or does he just go with, hey, I've got to pick the person that I want to pick? Because you think that he would, but also you have to get a person that's going to be acceptable. I mean, there's been a political appointees on the presidential side that the president would have chosen or did choose, and then when he ran it up the flagpole, it just wasn't going to work. You know, so he had to adjust what he was going to do. Is that going to happen with this justice appointment?
I think so. I don't expect him to, you know, or if he's able to get a nominee through the system while he's still in office, it's not going to be someone nearly as far to the left as his first 2 nominees, who are Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor, although I have their order of when they joined flipped. But, you know, he also could use this sort of as a political maneuver. You know, we already saw in the first week that this discussion came up, one of the names that got floated through the press was the governor of Nevada, who is a Republican. I can't think of his first name. Last name is Sandoval. And he's got a Latino American Republican who's moderate, who sort of sides with the left on a lot of issues. And he's, he puts the Republicans in a tight spot because he's, you know, essentially one of their own in a Western state. And, you know, this guy took his name out as a running, but Obama could certainly force their hand by picking someone who either the Republicans have previously voted on, you know, for an earlier appointment to one of the lower level courts, like the Court of Appeals, or he could pick someone, you know, that really riles up and polarizes the bases ahead of the election. I think he's going to eventually go with someone in the middle, but there's a chance that he sort of picks what you'll hear a lot in a lot of the analysis here is the sacrificial lamb, someone whose name will get tossed out there, is more of an extreme option. They won't stand a chance. They'll get hammered down, and all of a sudden, the next subsequent nominee seems all that much more reasonable for the Senate, who have to approve it. So There's certainly some strategy at play here for the president.
And then kind of take us through really quick just the ages of, and of course it was, you know, sudden and unexpected, but Antonin Scalia was, you know, up in age, and, you know, this can happen to anybody. Are there any other people that are, you know, kind of on that, you know, we don't want to do a death watch, but is there other people that may decide to retire? I mean, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's not getting any younger.
Exactly. You know, and I don't have the exact numbers here, but there's not an extensive record in modern era of justices dying in office. They've kind of adopted a strategy of strategically retiring at a point when someone in the White House who sort of aligns with their views is able to replace them with someone, you know, more along their line and sort of keep the status quo of the court in play. And so there's been a lot of pressure on Justice Ginsburg over the last few years to retire, essentially because she is now the oldest justice on the court. I don't know her actual age. I can look it up here in a minute if you'd like. But essentially, she's 82 years old. I mean, if there's a Republican president for the, you know, starting in a year from now, potentially for the next 4 or 8 years after that, you know, she's looking at being in her early 90s at that point, and you know, it would sort of present the same opportunity that Obama has here to, you know, flip a liberal seat for a conservative seat. So, I think at the same time, the justices are very wary that they are not entirely part of the political process. They might even tell you that they're completely separate from the political process. I don't know if many people would buy that these days, but they don't want to play into it. They want their opinions and their interactions and everything to sort of stick to what they claim is the letter of the law. And that's important for the legitimacy of the court system, that it's not caught up in the politics. It's a little unfortunate, and there's been comments you hear from Chief Justice Roberts that, you know, every time there's a nomination fight, and I think he's even said this before Justice Scalia died, you know, people's perceptions of the court get dragged down because it gets dragged into, you know, they're already low, you know, rating for Congress and for the White House.
Right.
And the courts, you know, for rule of law, people need to be able to respect and honor what a judge says and their ruling because it is final. And so the court is very sensitive to the fact that that it needs legitimacy in what it does. It can't be dragged in and be, you know, accused of making a decision for political means.
Well, it is interesting stuff, and you have, of course, front row seats to all of it. And for those people that are watching, whether it's the political campaign, and then of course you bring in the Supreme Court to it as well. And so, of course, we're a little bit late for news, but before we let you go, if you want to give out the information how people can keep up with you and the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin.
Absolutely. Well, we're primarily a publication that covers the local, state, and federal court systems and the legal judiciary system here in town. You can visit it at chicagolawbulletin.com. We've also got a monthly magazine, Chicago Lawyer Magazine, at chicagolawyermagazine.com. So check us out, look for our stuff, and make sure you pay attention to the judicial branch when you're looking into politics, you know, whether it's election season or further. It is a co-equal branch, and it's something that people should be aware of.
Oh, well, duly noted, and thanks so much. I appreciate all the input that you had today. And Mark Karlinski, thanks for being in WGN.
Thanks, Mark.
Of course. You guys have a good one.
All right, thanks. I love it. John Davis. Great tunes, bumpers coming into each one of these segments. 720 WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio, Dino Tiberi to my right. And there's been so many. We've been all, I don't want to say all over the board, but we've been everywhere. But it all ties together somehow because we had brought up 312-981-7200. People are texting in and calling in with their vice presidential suggestions. And we've had suggestions like Yosemite Sam. We have had suggestions from a platform perspective that, you know, or like bring back Saturday morning cartoons. And you and I were talking off the air about one of those cartoons that I think would make people happy. Maybe bring the elusive World Peace would be Speed Racer. I mean, Speed Racer was
sure.
Was a great, sure, there was all the things you know and love about a car chase, right? And occasional collisions. Most of the time, people walked away and shook their fist in anger, right?
At of
the,
course.
Right? And you had a Racer X, a little bit of mystery. Right? And then you had some family issues, right? Because that was a secret brother that nobody knew. And
that's right.
And then you had Spritel and Chim Chim, so animal lovers love that. And, of course, if you like kids, right?
Yeah. And it had a great hook, a great theme song right at the beginning of the show.
Speed Racer, here he comes.
Yeah, here comes Speed Racer. So he's a demon. Right out of the box they get you.
And then a little bit of tension, too, because the uncle was always, like, angry, right? Wasn't he like, I'm yelling, I drank too much, you know, or whatever he was, his deal was, right?
Yeah.
He was always kind of upset.
He was never really satisfied with Speed's, anything he did on the racetrack or anywhere else.
Tough to please. Yeah, tough to please. And, okay, so here's how it all ties in. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, this makes no sense at all. It doesn't, because someone else had texted in from the 708 that Pepe Le Pew would be a great vice presidential.
Hey, why don't we just go right to Foghorn Leghorn if we're going there? I mean,
well, Pepe Le Pew, of course, is the is a great French animated actor. You know, of
there's this, the tie
of the skunk variety, and that brings us to, and we teased it a little bit when we came in, is that the Chicago French market is Esquire's rated it one of the top 10 food courts in the country. Do you know, you've never been there, but I know that you're inspired to get down there and check it out. Now, it is one of the best places, and here's why. It has the unusual combination of great foods, everything from amazing pastrami sandwiches from Fumari. You've got Lily Q's on the barbecue side. You've got Saigon Sisters.
Boy.
You've got seafood. You've got lobster rolls. You've got everything, including a couple brand new selections on the clean eating movement. And
all in a French market. I would never would have thought that in a million years. That's great.
A person who's been involved and had her hand on the pulse of so much that's going on, not only with all the farmers markets and the French markets all over Chicagoland, but also Chicago French markets. On the line with us, it's Leslie Cahill. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dane. Thanks for having me.
Well, there's always exciting stuff going on. So we could obviously do an interview, you know, daily or hourly, or like the stocks, right? Every hour on the hour, like traffic.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But nowadays, you have a couple really cool restaurants that we're featuring here on the station, some new additions to the market.
Yeah, exactly. We've got two new openings this month that we're really excited to bring to the public because they're so different from everything else we have in the market. One of them is a business called Vegan Now. Vegan Now is the child of the original vegetarian soul food on the South Side.
Right.
And imagine that you can get something that looks like a chicken wing that is actually a vegan product, and it is absolutely amazing. So the food is beautiful. You know, it's one of those where you go through and you look at the beautiful food, you select what you want, and they weigh it by the pound, and off you go. You can blend in with any crowd if you're a vegetarian and you want to be incognito, because it just looks like it looks like, you know, meat and chicken and whatever they have out there for the day. It's beautiful food. So.
Right. Leslie, I mean, as someone who loves food, and you do that as well, you know, you think of vegan and that lifestyle, you know that it's good for you, right? It's certainly healthy, but it always feels like it's a compromise on taste, and what they're doing at Vegan Now seems like you can kind of break all of those rules and really enjoy what you're doing.
Exactly right. Yeah, the food is just delicious. They take from the soul culture primarily for the flavor profiles, but you can have something different every single day there, and it's just amazing. So we're happy to have them.
And you talk about the diversity, and of course, Chicago French Market, for those people that may not be familiar, has everything from amazing barbecue to cheeses, to sandwiches, to seafood. I mean, the scope is basically complete, but now you have gone island, right, and you're bringing the flavors of Aloha to the French Market.
Yeah, we have Aloha Poke coming in. We believe they'll be opened up by the beginning of next week. And poke is sort of a new trend coming up. It's basically cubed seasoned fish, and it's mixed kind of as a free-form salad, and it's served over various bases like rice or salad. So they also give you many different choices for topping. So you can come in here and have a really healthy meal featuring lean proteins and vegetables and sauces. And, you know, it's delicious, it's beautiful to look at, very fresh, and it's going to really help even further round out the market. So we're happy to bring Aloha Poke in as well.
Right? I mean, lobster rolls, you've got Saigon Sisters, you've got the best pastrami sandwich this side of the Pecos, and of course when you bring in some of the flavors of the islands, right, you never have to leave. Do you find that happens, Leslie, that people come there and the experience is just so absolutely complete and the chairs are comfortable that they just don't leave?
Well, yes, that can be a little bit of a problem. Our lunch hours here are just so busy. And we're trying to encourage people to come and visit us at other times of the day. And part of the thing, one of the things that we're doing to make that happen is we've been offering happy hour specials.
Nice.
And you think of happy hour as, you know, cocktails or beer or wine, and we do have beer and wine happy hour specials. But we also have our food vendors featuring specials between 4:30 and 6:30. So if you're curious about some of the food here, you can come in on your way home, and you can try some Bon Bao at Saigon Sisters. You can try a mini pulled pork slider at Lily Q. De Lobster is doing 4 lobster rolls as a special. So, you know, it's really something to think about on your way home. If you want to try some of the new foods here, you should come on in for happy hour.
For happy hour. So what times is happy hour again, and is it every day of the week or just a couple days?
Well, we're doing it Monday through Friday from 4:30 to 6:30. And then to kind of punch up the middle of the week, we also have a rush hour concert series on Wednesdays and Thursdays. And we've got a lot of really cool talent from the city of Chicago that comes in and plays from 4:30 to 6:30 on just the Wednesdays and Thursdays. So this is music that you're really going to enjoy paying attention to, and you're going to fall in love with some of these artists. But it's also fine for the background. So if you want to come in with a group and sit and enjoy the happy hour food and drink and talk, that works too.
Wow. I mean, there are so many reasons to get down to Chicago French Park. And, of course, there's no substitute for actually being there, whether it's lunch hour, whether it's happy hour, whether you're going to stay and eat or take the stuff home and enjoy it with your family. So there's no substitute for actually being there. But for people who want to check out some of the things online, maybe some of the information, maybe get subscribed to the newsletter, where can they go to keep up with it online?
You can go to www.chicagofrenchmarket.com. And there's two last things I'd like to mention to you for this month of March that we have going on. Would that be okay?
Of course. Come on.
Sure. Okay. Well, one event we have going on that we've done for a number of years now is called Hop the Bunny Train. And this is a kid-centric event on Saturday, March 26th. So we're going to have a kiddie train riding around the concourse from 11 until 2 p.m. We'll have an Easter egg hunt in the market at 1:30 p.m. And there will, of course, be the Easter Bunny with pictures available to be taken with the Easter Bunny. So that's a great family event. We encourage people to come down. And then all month long on the concourse, we're offering Marché du Printemps, which is a spring market. We have new artisans daily, and we're featuring jewelry, clothing, gifts, and more. So that will be operating every day from 8 a.m. until 6 p.m. out on the concourse.
Wow. All different times of the week to be able to enjoy specific things. Two new restaurants coming on, so two new extra food-related reasons. And, of course, you've got the music, you've got the Easter Bunny, and then you bring the market outside of its of physical borders, right, and enjoy that spring market as well. So get down there to the Chicago French Market, see it in person, check it out online. And Leslie Kale, thanks so much for everything that you do, and thanks for being in WGN.
Thank you, Dane. Have a great day.
It is going to be a great day. Thanks to Leslie for joining Chicago French Market over the town. Clinton, I believe. Hey, that's a president, too. Look, keep with the theme.
There's a tie in there.
Yeah, hey, baby. So 606 did text in as far as great representatives from the animated and cartoon world that would also, I think, be incredible politicians. This isn't necessarily my opinion, but the 606 said Bugs Bunny, very smart.
Sure.
He's always coming.
Great range.
Porky Pig, not so smart. But also, but a sympathetic figure, right?
Maybe the Chris Christie. I'm sorry.
Foghorn Leghorn, you bring in.
Yeah, I say. Yeah.
One of our boys, yep. There you go.
That's it. We're locking it down.
I am excited. When we come back from this break, we are going to talk a little bit about the mighty and future, hopefully, you know, successful world champion Chicago Cubs. And the season has started with spring training, so stay tuned for that. We're going to talk about that in just a second. When we come back, it's Daniel in on 720 WGN.
Monday. Hi, this is Joel Quenneville.
The Hawks head out on the road next week to beat up the Blues and then the Stars in Dallas.
WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio. To my right, more than one person. It is Dino Tiberi. You know him as the voice of so many college. Well, I guess they would be going to college after, but so many great high school basketball tournaments, events. I know that it seems like every time like I talk to you, you are calling a game of some sort. And I was hoping that as you get into calling the highlight season coming up, that there'll be a little bit of a, how does one do color for highlight?
I don't know how that works out, but no, I just had my last basketball game for Hinsdale Central. I did games for Hinsdale Central and for West Chicago this year, where I have friends that coach at both schools. And tonight was a regional championship game where the Red Devil unfortunately came up a little short as the Hilltoppers of Glenbard West move on to the sectional next week. But yeah, it's the last game for me this year. It's it was a busy year for me, and I like that, so it's been fun.
Well, you know, you're there at so many like big these are the kind of moments, right, that these kids are going to experience and they're never going to forget, right? Is it kind of like a constant stream of one shining moments?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things during the season that they go through. I mean, you know, there's rivalry games you know, like tonight it was a packed house, or, you know, both schools had a lot of kids were there and it was back and forth, and it was a great atmosphere for high school basketball. And it's a shame that one of the teams had to lose, but that's how it goes. And
you would think in this day and age that they would
both,
you know,
win.
Well, I'm just saying, so my little,
they both advanced to the next round.
Big
shout out
to Maxwell. Just he won first place in his chess tournament. So there you go. But when it was in Little League, and at the end of one of the games, and just to give, so he was playing like T-ball. He's just a little kid.
Uh-huh.
And I remember him walking out into the middle of the field and asking everyone, it's like, hey, does anybody have any idea where third base is? He actually said and then afterwards, as all the kids kind of wandered around bumping into each other, looking for snacks or something, and he had asked, like, hey, coach, did we win? And then tussled his hair a little bit, says, we win every week, buddy.
That's right. There is no loser here. Everyone wins together.
So at least at the level you're at, you know, somebody has to go home. It's been a long time since I've seen a high school basketball game. And I was wondering if any of the old cheers still exist. You know, we got Spirit. Yes, we do. We have Spirit. How about you?
No, we don't really see any of that. It gets more, you know, it's, you know, they yell out different things depending on who they're playing. And, you know, it just depends. I think there was like, you know, it's ACT scores were being yelled out or something.
Whoa.
Yeah, they were taken to a different level. Some of the schools, their one rival, Lions Township, they had creative things going back and forth. So it was fun. It was a fun year for me. And, you know, I've been doing this. That was the 19th year I've been doing this.
Wow.
Now. And so it's been, you know, between a couple different schools, and it's been a lot of fun doing it. And I hope to continue to do it in the future. So it's all wrapped up though. I'm all done. So now, you know, I don't have to do these back to backs. When we fill in, I'm not going right from there to here.
How about an Rowdie? That's the way to spell Rowdy. Rowdy. Let's get rowdy.
Yeah. Woo. No, you don't see that anymore.
Who's the writer for this? You know, cause you don't have,
I don't know who does it. I should ask the cheerleading coach the next time I see her. Where do you, is there like a manual that you follow to get these cheers? Or what happens? Or do you steal them from other schools when they do them? Or how does it work?
It's going to be like the book, and it's on the cover. It says like, so you're a high school, you know, athletic coach.
Right.
Here's your
manual. This is what you follow. Winning, this is what you chant. When you're losing, this is what you chant.
I'm sure it's passed down. Maybe it's a leather bound book passed down by cheerleaders from through the ages. But so these are, when it comes to cheers and celebrations and all that kind of stuff, as a sports fan and as a longtime Cub fan, these are the times that you just hope you can, I guess, take lots of pictures, take lots of mental notes, because years from now, hopefully, well, I guess either way, we're going to say we were there. Will it be, you know, crushing disappointment?
Or just an ultimate exhilaration at the end of the season?
Yeah. I mean, so as the Cubs now, and we've seen a little bit of the writing on the wall over the last couple of years where, hey, they have the number one farm system. Or, hey, you know, they've got the top prospects in there. Or even, hey, like, look. This is a team that got all the way into the league championship series. They had the best record in baseball, you know, from the end, you know, the middle of the season on, really hit their stride. And now it seems as though, like, on all cylinders, you know, and Joe Mann is just as crazy as ever. I mean, crazy like a fox.
Yeah, I mean.
I'm excited.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, just the off season in itself was exciting enough. You know, after the disappointment of, you know, not getting to the World Series at the end of last year, you know, they turn around in the offseason then and the moves that they made right up until just a week and a half ago or this last week when they got Dexter Fowler to come into the fold. I mean, I never would have thought that in a million years the way that things were going. And then all of a sudden, there he is.
You know, as a long-suffering fan of the things that they've been doing and not doing on the north side, it was always the kind of, oh, my gosh, this horrible thing just happened. And then you just had to kind of deal with it as other teams got better. And now it seems like they have almost spoiled, even though it's just very early on in this kind of mindset. They've kind of spoiled us to the point where, like, next year going into the off season, you're going to look at those top and say, like, well, why can't we have them? And why won't they come here for less money?
Well, you're going to find next, you know, depending on what happens this year, of course. I think, like we talked about before, I think they put a lot of eggs in this off season's basket, because next year is not going to be, as far as a free agent class, is not going to be anywhere near as good as this one was. So I think they kind of overloaded themselves, you know, with the moves that they made and got, you know, some quality players. And I really think right now that you know, the organization as a whole is probably as healthy as I can remember it being ever, as far as I've watched Cub baseball, and it's been, you know, a long, long time, you know, for 50 years almost. So it's been, you know, it's definitely an exciting time on the north side, and I can't wait till to really get into it here now that spring training started.
Sean, you got something?
I just think that the Chicago Cubs, if we have to look at where the Kansas City Royals are right now and where the Cubs are right now, is where the Royals were 5 years ago. Right, and it took them 4 to 5 years to get to the point to make it, lose to the Giants, and then finally get over that hump. A lot of times you expect teams to just, once they get the package together, to automatically just be able to succeed. There's another hump called learning to win. And they lost to the Mets. They might have to actually get to the next round and lose again,
right,
to learn how to get over the next obstacle. So patience, I think Cubs fans are very optimistic, but they need to be a little bit patient,
sure,
with this young core, because it takes time. It takes about 4 or 5 years for that young core to actually get to a point where they're a championship-level team and know how to win.
Well, I have to agree with you there. I think, you know, the Royals were a great blueprint, because they were – no, they had a lot of down years. They had a lot of great higher draft picks, and then their players started to get it together. They blended in some free agents, and they had a winning formula put together, just like the Cubs did. You know, we went through our struggles here where they were just awful, and it turned out that we got some great draft picks out of it. Plus, they went ahead and upgraded the front office. I mean, going out and getting Theo Epstein and the supporting cast around him. That was one of the first steps that needed to be done so they could take that next step.
Now, I think the one difference between the Royals and the Cubs is Joe Madden. I think Madden might speed up the process for this Cubs franchise, because it took a long time for Kansas City to actually find the right manager. And then when they find Ned Yost, we didn't think Ned Yost would be able to win based upon his past.
Well, right. Ned Yost never really gave you a reason to think that he was going to be the one to put that franchise over the top as far as the manager is concerned. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But Joe Madden, an experienced guy, took a team to a World Series. He works well with young players. He works well with getting a lot of personalities meshed together. So, you know, it's going to be an exciting time, and I really can't wait for it to get started.
Yeah, I agree.
It's one thing about having a bad team and getting those draft picks. It's another thing about choosing those right players that turn out to end up, you know, fulfilling all of the potential and doing it. And those are some great points, Sean, too. But the I think here, like, Chicago has a lot of advantages. It's got to be really hard to win a World Series in Kansas City, a small market team with all of those things. And Joe Madden, and you're right, he is the X factor as well, because what he'll do is he'll pepper in players that can help kind of speed that process along on the learning to win. You know, he puts John Lester, who's been a two-time, you know, World Series winner, and he brings in Zobrist, who just won. You know, you bring in Lackey, and you bring in people that can share winning experiences with those young players. And then you've really got something. So we're going to talk a little bit more baseball, spring training, and Cubs when we come back. And stay tuned, because we're going to have Evan Moore from Red Eye and DNA helping us with that as well. It's Dane Neal in until 5 o'clock on 720 WGN. You know, they thought of when they first came up with that that song, 720. WGN, Dane Neal in studio, All-State Showcase. We've got Dino Tiberi to my right, Sean Davis in the booth. When they first came up with that song, instead of the Cubs are going to win today, it started out as the Cubs are going to win occasionally.
The Cubs might win today.
Cubs might win occasionally. But then now, hey, this is going to happen. You can play that song all the time. And I'm not sure, you know, it's not just the Cubs. There's other teams out there, not only here in the city, of course, with the White Sox, but all across, and they are all mobilizing and enjoying to some extent. Spring training on the line with us now. We've got a guy who writes for DNA Info and the Red Eye. It is the one and only Evan Moore. Evan, welcome to WGN.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, Evan, are you excited about this? Is this spring training any different for you than it would be, you know, as a professional? You're doing it at a professional level, and as a journalist, do you just see this as work? You just get in there, you do it, or is there a level of excitement that you even feel?
Well, it's a little bit of excitement, obviously, because the way both teams in town are supposed to be better than usual. But especially with the Cubs, the way the season ended and the signing they had in the off season, it's going to be kind of cool to cover a team that hasn't obviously won in a long time, which is well documented, but also has a young nucleus that seems like they're going to get it done.
What are some of the, and I think anybody from a just even a layman's perspective can see, like, hey, you know, Jason Hayward, that sounds pretty good. John Lackey, wow, that's a guy that's pretty good. But what do you see as some of the moves either that they've made that are the most important, and then what things do you think they're going to have to do as the season gets going to kind of stay on the track everyone's hoping for?
Well, I think the Hayward move is pretty good, because obviously you look at his numbers and you see, well, he doesn't had that many home runs or the value of there isn't all that good. But so that's the this thing about him is that he's known for his range and his glove, and he saves runs. And see what happened with the Cubs at the end of last season in the Mets series, where they could have used someone that could have helped them outfield to save runs. He saw with Chris Schwarber, and also with the back end of bullpen, he saw Arrieta and Hendricks and other pitches on the team after a stretch out their innings, because they really didn't have the bullpen that they have this day, they're appearing to have in this year.
Well, with that being said, Evan, the acquisition with Dexter Fowler coming back into the fold, how important do you think that's going to be able to allow Hayward to get back to his natural position? And then also, what do you make of Soler's playing time going forward? I know Joe Maddon usually has a way of finding a place for everybody in the lineup, but that Dexter Fowler signing was quite a surprise. And now, with the fact that he'll be playing center field and it allows Hayward to go back to his natural position, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a good move. Obviously, it shocked all of us, but that was kind of overreported, the fact that Fowler didn't actually agree to a deal with the Orioles, so the Cubs are kind of always in play. And I think it will show that the team is going to be strong in the outfield and going to make the team more flexible than they already are.
Now, with the Kyle Schwarber, the experiment in left field last year, and he's going to be the full-time, well, most of the time in left field. They'll probably do a little platooning there, depending on who, if there's a lefty pitching, he may be out of the lineup, and they may put Soler out there. The fact that they bring in Fowler, and now if Hayward's in right, they have Schwarber in left field, in a combination with Soler, how do you feel that the lineup's going to be at this point? I mean, Joe Maddon, if he's done nothing else, he's been able to juggle different players in different positions to get the lineup solidified. And what are your thoughts about what the lineup will look like coming into this season?
You really don't see any holes in that lineup now, because obviously Fowler goes back the way he was doing, and now see. It will go behind him. Then you'll have Brand and Rizzo and Soler fit in there. And also, you know, at the bottom board, you have Russell and obviously the pitcher spot. So they look pretty good.
And with the pitching staff, you get John Lackey to fill in the third spot. And now you've got Hamill in the fourth. And then now Kyle Hendricks will be battling with Adam Warren possibly for that fifth spot. But Hendricks having the upper hand after having a nice season last year towards the end. What do you feel about the Cubs' pitching staff? Do you feel like it's going to be one of the top rotations in the game?
It's got to be.
Which is what I think it is, but just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Well, it has to be. They'll be better, because you saw they played a team last year in the Mets who rested their main pitchers as much as they could during the season, and you saw what happened when they played the Cubs in the NLCS. Those arms were ready to go when they needed them, and you saw what the Cubs on there and where guys were kind of tired on the back end. So I think it's the pitchers are much more rested in the bullpen. East innings, that'll bode well for the team when they really need it in October.
Well, before we came to the segment where we were getting a chance to talk with you, Sean had mentioned some of the things that, you know, are sort of those intangibles that people put in place that help a team kind of learn to win. It's one thing, and we've seen teams on paper that have, like, the most talented players, but if you don't have the right leadership in those certain games, and if you don't have, you know, a cohesive bunch that all pulls together, and I don't think there's, in any walk of life, but especially in baseball and at this level, there's no substitute for experience. So, you know, but I'm sure Vegas, those guys don't miss a trick, right? You know, they've taken that into consideration as they kind of pick the Cubs as this year's World Series favorite. So what do you think is going to happen? Do you think that they should, you know, barring injury, and I guess that's a really big but what do you think is going to, do you think that this is a team that can fully realize the, you know, some of the predictions?
Well, you saw they did when most of the nucleus had any playoff experience, and that was pretty much the difference between them and the Mets toward the end. Like I said earlier, was the fact that the Cubs were kind of, their starting pitchers were eating up innings and they were overworked. And like I said, the Mets on the other hand, who with their guys during the season as much as they could, and they were fresh when they needed them. So I think that's the difference, and that could put them over the top.
Well, Evan, who do you think will be challenging the Cubs in the National League? I think it's an even year, so you got to believe San Francisco will be in the mix. Washington's improved themselves a little bit, and the Mets, of course, the team the Cubs lost to last year. Who else do you feel will be a viable candidate to challenge the Cubs in the National League coming up this season?
Well, the Cardinals aren't going anywhere, even though the Cubs, took away two of their key players in Wacky and Haywood, but I don't think they're going anywhere. And I think the Dodgers will improve somewhat. And also with the Nationals, they have Dusty Baker over there, and that team needs someone to, veteran presence to get them together. So I think it's not going to be a cakewalk for them, but I think they'll do pretty well.
And then you look at the team on the south side too, and of course we've got two teams, both of them supposed to be pretty good. You know, do you think that this is a year that the White Sox pull it together, or do you think that, you know, unfortunately, and they're one of those teams on paper looked great last year, it just didn't come through?
Well, their bullpen in the last couple of years, the thing that's kind of was hurting them, and also they couldn't score runs. And like the strength of the team, obviously, with the starting pitching with Sale and Quintana and other folks, but I think that those things will work themselves out, and they'll still play a little bit better. And also, then no one expected. People rolled off Kansas City a little bit last year, and also it seems like those same folks are trying to say that they can't keep this their winning going. And also, no one expected the Minnesota to play as well as they did.
Yeah, there's always, and again, that's why they play the games, right? You've got to play the season through. You never know what's going to happen, and of course, there's going to be some surprises. So I'm excited. I think that's one of the things that, at least on both sides of town, everybody is excited, because it looks as though the prospects are there for maybe some history-making things to happen on the north side, and then another great team that the White Sox can follow up with on the south side. So, Evan, for people who want to keep up with you and read your thoughts, whether it's a DNA info or whether it's over at the Red Eye, where can they find you?
Well, you can find me also at the Shadow League, and also at the Athletic, and you can find me on Twitter at Evan F. Moore.
Evan F. Moore on Twitter. Keep up with him for all his thoughts on baseball. And Evan, thanks so much for being in WGN.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Enjoy your weekend.
Right, thanks. Evan.
We're going to enjoy it a lot more because, you know, the Mighty Cubs are playing. Who knows? Did you get a chance to see any of the excerpts or anything from the game today? It was kind of nice to see him back on television.
Well, I haven't. I didn't get a chance to watch today, but there's certainly tomorrow, whenever they're on next, they're going to be on quite a bit here in the spring, and I'll have to check the highlights out online when I get a chance. You know, it's a good time to do that. So maybe later this morning we'll check that out.
Dino has channeled Harry Carey. If you've got a question for Harry about this year's, even though he has passed away years ago, he is still, of course, keeping tabs on what's going on the field. And, of course, you know, up in, you know, him and Ron Santo.
Well, listen to Jack Brickhouse, myself, Vince Lloyd, we got the old band back together.
The Cub Consortium.
That's right. It's former broadcasters all uniting as one to rally the Cub all the way in the 2016.
Well, someone's going to ask about the closers from the 815. We'll get Harry's answer on that when we come back. It is Dane Neal in until, well, just another few minutes until 5 o'clock on 720 WGN. WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio in for another handful of minutes, and Dino Tiberi has channeled. He is the foremost Harry Carey stylist.
I like the word stylist, Dane.
What would I say?
It makes me sound like a barber.
Or Harry Carey conduit. The conduit of Carey. In fact, in course, you know, you and I have known each other for absolutely forever. Whenever there's any kind of Cub, you know, thought process or information, or if they're going to make the playoffs or not make the playoffs, certainly spring training, you are going to be right here. But this is like a big time of year for you because, and you were actually on with our very own Rokan doing a 5 at 5, you know, for the toast to Harry.
Well, there was a toast the other night over at Harry Carey's down in on Kinsey and Dearborn, and we had a good time over there. A lot of people coming in and out. I got a chance to talk with Rhino for a few minutes.
How is a Rhino? Now, of course, welcomed back into the fold. You know, you and I were there at the Cubs convention where he had kind of his full unveiling as like, hey, he's back.
The Goodwill Ambassador, yeah. It's great to have him back. He's excited about being back with the ball club. And, you know, it was a good time had by all. I got to talk to Roe for a few minutes late in the broadcast. He did a 5 on 5. It was just, I think it was just some different clips from the broadcast years, and I got to do a little interview with the traffic girl on the show, and it was quite entertaining. Right. We had a good time. We're going to get the audio for that. It was a good time, though. We had a lot of fun. Dutchie, of course, is charming as always. It was great to see her, and a lot of great people there that night, so a lot of fun. And we'll be having more of that this year with opening day coming up, and I like to get out to a few ball game later on in the year.
Well, you know, Harry had said that God, you know, wants the Cubs to someday.
The good Lord wants the Cubs to win.
Someday.
Well, I think he wants them to win now.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, let's just not like beat around the bush anymore. Let's go ahead and do it. And 312-981-7200, you can text in or you can call in with any kind of Cub-related questions that you may have. Or thoughts, right? It doesn't have to be a question, just your thoughts. For Harry, we did have someone from the 815 wanted to know, what about the closers? When you think about it, as we looked at it last year, there were some holes, right? You had some young, unproven talent with all the potential in the world. We didn't know, right? Now a lot of that has been realized. And then you had what was kind of the weak link was the pitching staff. It was like we had a couple good players, but you know, bring in John Lester, just one guy. But now they've stepped up, and now the staff looks good. But so they want to know about the closers.
Well,
I think that's a good point.
Rondon had, you know, at the beginning of the year, they didn't know what they had in him, and he'd had a, you know, decent season before that, and he ended up being a pretty solid closer, an ERA under 2. He had about 30 saves. They did a nice job slotting in the arms and the bullpen, the setup man, Pedro Strop in the setup position, and they've got a lot of relief pitchers that have a lot of flexibility in the event that they have an injury now, so you got guys like Travis Wood and Clayton Richard and some of the others, Trevor Cahill. There's a lot of good arms in the bullpen, along with this Adam Warren that they picked up from the Yankee in the Castro trade. So they've done a nice job of getting the arms in the bullpen and the rotation, of course, with John Lackey coming in as the third starter now behind Arrieta, who had a fantastic season last year, and Lester will be ready to go this year. So I think the bullpen and the rotation are going to be a lot better than they were a year ago, which really leads to a lot of success, it appears, for the Cub on the north side of Chicago this year.
You look at John Lackey is one of those guys that is absolutely definitely going to make an impact. Do you think that there's any, because kind of the chemistry of the team has been one of those real strong points, right? They're all kind of kooky, kind of goofy. Did you see, like, I'm not going to miss a thing where, like, Kawasaki was singing to, like, did you see that?
I haven't seen it yet. I've heard about it, though.
This is a fun bunch. And, of course, the ringleader, the grand master.
The grand poobah of all of it, Joe Madden. Boy, oh, boy.
He's Joe Madden. So when you have a guy like a John Lester and then you have Jake Arrieta being the opening day starter. Do you think there's any kind of, hey, that should be me? Or do you think you just recognize, hey, who cares, right?
I just think they're all going to band together. I mean, and there's competition, of course, between the pitchers. They all want to do their best, and they all want to be that guy, and they're going to strive to do that. But right now, everything's slotted into place. They don't really have any, you know, there's not really a lot of room for movement up and down the rotation except for maybe the back end. And I just think they're going to go out and be professionals. It's a good thing you have a nice veteran presence on the ball club and a lot of young players as well, which last year the chemistry was great, and I think this year it'll be more of the same.
We saw Arrieta come up and just become otherworldly, right? Just, you know, go from a pitcher who was great, had some little flashes of greatness, but then become, yeah, have a legendary season. Do you see, like, anybody in that rotation that is going to step up and become a different guy? You know, like a Wood, a Hamill, like a Hendrick. Is anybody going to come up and be like, whoa?
Well,
you know,
I think that I think Jason Hamill really realized that during last season when he got a lot of quick hooks, that he really needed to get himself in better condition and get himself ready for a long season. And I think he's done that in the off season. He's down a little bit, and he's been better, a little bit better shape. He lost a little weight. And the reports are that he's throwing the ball well. And he was throwing the ball well in the first half of last year until he got injured. And so if he just stays away from the injury bug, I think he's going to have a bounce-back season. As Joe Maddon had a lot of quick hooks for him last year, I think he's going to prove that he's going to be able to do a little bit better job this season coming up. But they have guys in case he can't, so we're going to have to wait and see.
What a texter from the 630 said, what odds does Arnie Harris give the Cubs?
Listen, as long as Arnie gives me some more great hat shots up in heaven, we're going to have it all covered. Don't worry about it.
Hey, guys, we just had a caller call in, and he wants to know, do the Cubs have the potential with the young core to do what the Blackhawks have been doing in the past 6 seasons?
And what does that mean, like dynasty? Like
meaning they continue to win year in and year out?
Yeah. And this year for the Blackhawks I think is amazing because I think everybody thought this would be a step-back rebuild year, and they got two of the top five players in the league. So, yeah.
Well, again, I think with both clubs, the Blackhawks, their front office also now is – fortified their team with some players at the trade deadline, and they recognized some things they needed to shore up, and Theo Epstein did the same thing. He knew he had to get a couple more players and another pitcher especially, and he went out and they made a commitment to Hayward and right in the outfield to add another great bat, another great on-base guy, and then Ben Zobrist also. So it's important, you know, with all the strikeouts with the young core, but getting back to your question, I think there's no doubt that this core is going to be around for a while, and I think this team's got the potential right now to go on a nice run here for a few years and be really good.
So who are the three guys that you would say 4 to 5 years from now will be here? I mean, Soler might not be here. Schwarber's been on the trade block, or rumors swirling around him. What three guys would be that core?
Well, I think right now you have to put Bryan in that list. Addison Russell will be another one at shortstop. And the third player, you know, I think it's going to be hard to tell. That, you know, it's right now there's a couple of positions with young players that are in flux. I mean, Baez is another talent, but right now they don't have a place for him. But I think in a couple of years, if he's able to play, to stay on the ball club, he's going to graduate into a position when Zobrist moves on from his spot in a couple of seasons if he's not traded. So those are three guys that I look at right now, and Schwarber as well, because – if he can just prove he can play in the outfield and do a solid job defensively, or just an average job defensively, his bat is no question a major league bat, and I think he's a guy that's really going to be someone the Cub can build around.
And Roger, I wanted to get your viewpoint. Of course, you're busy monitoring the world of news and, mm-hmm. and weather and traffic. But do you have a prediction on our mighty Cub as they start spring training?
I'm a optimistic pessimist. I think we've discussed this before in the past.
Sounds like a new political party.
Yeah, I'll choose my running mate tomorrow.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, I love the Cubs. I grew up as a Cubs fan. I think I'll always love them. But man, I've been hurt too many times. I'm like a scorned lover, you know. I like the young kids. I like the desire to win. Show me what you got.